Welcome to another incredible episode of Coffee with Source. This season, we're diving into resilience, and I'm looking forward to having a conversation with my new friend, Jennifer Chapman. She's an Indy native and Ball State graduate, has had a unique road to get where she is today. Life challenged her first at the age of 11 and again at 34. She spent 15 years in corp sales world, working with a huge beer and wine wholesaler and a national supplier. I'm really excited to dive into this conversation with Jen and find out what resilience means to her and what nuggets she has for those of us who are going through some rocky times. Stay tuned. We're just diving into it. So welcome, Jennifer, to Coffee with Source. And I'm really excited to have this conversation. I feel like for some reason, I don't know if it's the tone of your voice or if it's just, you know, there's some people's energy where I feel like I've known you for a long time and yeah. I just met you 30 seconds ago. And it's kind of my new thing for this season because last season, I feel like I've been, you know, a podcast veteran. But I would meet my guests before and spend like 30, 45 minutes speaking with them, but get so involved in the conversation and ask all of the questions. Like I wanted to know more. And I felt like by the time we'd meet for the recording, I was like, hey, nice to see you. So I wanted to just dive in with you. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about you and your journey on this road of resilience?
Yeah. So I'm born and raised here in Indianapolis, for any of the folks that listen that are, you know, live in the Midwest. But I had my first life changing, you know, trauma and experience at age 11 when I lost my mom very suddenly. So I had to immediately adapt to a new normal without my mom, which no one teaches you how to do that. It's really
not at any age. Not at any age, and 11 is like when you need your.
Yeah.
You're right. I'm sorry for your loss.
Thank you so much.
Like when the boys are going to start showing up and all the questions about, you know, what do you do with the hairs on your legs? And I can relate because my mom wasn't around and I was raised by my grandma, but it was just not a conversation. And I've always felt in the back of my head that it's like your mom's job to tell you like, oh, you got to start shaving.
Oh, or, yeah.
Like you're going to get your period and it's really going to suck, you know? So yeah. These like monumental moments.
Yeah. And I'm thankful that I had such an amazing support system without her. You know, I was super close with my aunt, her sister. I mean, they were like 16 months apart. So I grew up close with her anyways, but then obviously, you know, at age 11, she was my go-to for so much, as well as my grandma. My mom's mom was, you know, super close with her, and she became, gosh, my best friend, especially late teens and early 20s. I mean, my dad is fantastic and was at the time too, but balancing, you know, myself and my brother was nine. Yeah. He was just doing the best he could, right, with what he had. And so
did you have any siblings?
Yeah, one brother who is 17 months younger than myself.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you become a caregiver?
You know, I didn't. He definitely like, you know, connected more with my dad and my dad's parents, my grandparents on that side, where I was drawn more towards my aunt, you know, my mom's sister and my mom's parents, my grandparents, but all together, you know, they did so much for us shortly after that and through, you know, high school and things like that.
So you're 11, you suddenly lose your mom. All of these things are going on in your life. You have to, you know, become courageous or get curious about what it means to face your life without your mom, which is huge. How did that impact you in that moment in time? What are some of the beliefs you started believing about yourself in your life?
I would like to think then that I don't think I did as great a job, you know, as looking back now, that I didn't take some things for granted, like I saw my friends do, and the relationship they had with their mom, which sometimes wasn't always great, right? Like, and I could imagine if my mom were, you know, with me in my teens, that we would have had that sometimes challenging relationship and not always get along and all that. But because I didn't have that, you know, I would see some of my friends and the way they treated their moms at the time, like
infuriating.
It was.
Yeah.
They just didn't realize. Yeah. They just didn't realize. So that stands out to me for sure.
And then do you think that in terms of, you know, being able to trust, or did it affect your relationships with female figures in your life, getting close with, you know, maybe more authoritarian figures of the female gender? Because sometimes I know I had, like, if any other older woman, you know, would try to approach me, I'd be like, no, you're not the mom, you're not the boss, you're not the person, right?
Yeah, that's so interesting, because I didn't.
We don't know it at the time, but as an adult, you're like, what's my problem? Why am I such a bitch? You know, right. Like, why do I seem so standoffish, but I've got a heart of gold? Like little things like that with, you know, with women in authority figures, I guess, I can't say, rewind, but, you know, in positions of authority who would try to get close to me, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. like a school counselor, someone and I'd just be like, no, everything's fine. Like, what's wrong with you? Cause I felt like that was. But I didn't know that at the time. As I said, it's many years later when you're journaling and doing your inner healing work, you're like, oh, my inner child was resisting the motherly affection.
Yes, that's so interesting. I didn't do that. I always appreciated like my friends' moms wanting to kind of take me in as much as they could. But I will tell you that shield came up when my dad started dating, which he definitely took. Okay, I was 11. He probably didn't start dating until I was probably 14 or 15. Like, it definitely took him quite some time to even process the grief of his wife. But when he did start, that's when my shield came up. And I can even feel sensations in my body right now.
Yeah, like, I was going to say, I can feel it for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How protective I was, right? Of my dad and my brother and myself. Like, who is this woman? And who, not that she, I didn't experience any woman trying to take over as a mother figure when it came to who my dad dated. Because, you know, he didn't bring many women to us by any means. There was a couple of serious relationships, but yeah, that's where I struggled.
Yeah. And so fast forward, you become an adult, you struggle. There's so many more questions. I feel like that could be an entire show.
Yeah.
Of just talking about the shield coming up with your dad dating. So we'll have to have you back on because we got started a bit late today, but we'll have you back on and dive into that topic, because again, I can relate so much. And so many like inner child wounds, you know, stem from like, there's so many questions, right? Like the abandonment, the fear of rejection, you're stealing the one person that I have left, and all mm-hmm. of these things, all of these fears. So you make it through high school, college. When does this, you know, road to resilience sort of pop up? When does the universe ask you and demand strength and courage of you again on your journey?
Such a great question, Emmy. So when I turned 34, I was in the corporate sales world, coming off the best year of my career. But when I turned 34, I had this epiphany that just hit me in the face that my mom was 34 when she passed away. So I had this moment, you know, of like, she was so young. I just knew I was young at the time, you know, I was 11. But then to turn 34 and know like, oh my gosh, I still have so much life to live.
There's
so
much left to do.
Yeah. So I had that moment. And then 9 months later, still at 34, I suffer a life-changing stroke. Yeah.
What the hell?
Right. Which is what I think everyone said around me when all of that was happening. So I'll shorten this part of my story as far as I spent a week in the hospital, 10 days in acute rehab, relearning how to walk, talk, adapt to vision loss. Spent 4 months in outpatient rehab. And really that first year was all about the physical recovery.
What caused it?
Yeah. So it took them 18 months to figure out what caused it, which was a small tear in the artery in the back of my neck.
Caused by?
That's what they couldn't figure out. And I will tell you, 4.5 years later, so 90 days ago or so, is really when I found out that answer, because I started seeing a functional medicine where they go to the root of, yeah, of things, right? And not just mask, yeah, symptoms of so many, you know, diseases and things that people are suffering from. But my body was producing high calcium, my thyroid, and producing high calcium is going to cause your arteries to thin and narrow and eventually dissect. And I didn't know that until recently.
That's insane.
Yeah, it was.
So you're 34 and you have this epiphany. Oh my God, my mom died at 34. I've got so much living left to do. And then the universe is like,
yes,
you know, and when I say the universe, I don't mean that they directly meant to harm you, but I mean that, you know, they need you to wake up to something or to have, yes, this realization or to jolt you or, you know, yes, whatever it is. So no disrespect, guys. But, so then you have this stroke and you're like, holy shit. Okay. Mom died at 34. I almost died at 34. What am I going to do differently with this time that I have?
Yes. And I probably a little over a year after it happened is when I hired a life coach. And really through working with her for about 7 or 8 months, I did a lot, right? I did a lot of, comprehending the loss of my former self.
Yeah.
The old me. I didn't realize that I was grieving this old version of myself. And I think that's what a lot of stroke survivors or somebody that has had life-changing, situations happen. It's happening for them for a reason. And that was a big thing that she taught me. It was like, this happened for you, not to you.
And I had this conversation yesterday, and it's very important to highlight that when you're going through the yucky stuff and you're in the shit, when somebody comes up to you and says, you know, this too shall pass, everything happens for a reason, you want to punch them in the fucking face. Excuse my French. So that's not the right time to walk up to someone in your life who's going through a lot of crap and say, everything happens for a reason. Just chill on that. And when they're ready to hear it or to get curious, or there's a moment where you can lean into that vulnerability with them and say, you know, there's a lesson, message, and gift. What can that be? That's the time.
Yes.
Yeah. Cause my friend Deb and I were chatting yesterday, and she's like, you know, these moments where you lose a child, which I've experienced, or, you know, these insanely painful moments in your life, when you're sitting in it, there's no rhyme or reason. There's no understanding what's going on.
Yeah.
The pain is so real. The confusion, the why me, the, but I'm a good person. You're 34. You had a stroke. Like, unless you were smoking 2 packs of cigarettes a day, you were 400 pounds. And even that, I'm just like, I'm not judging, but I'm saying you're doing all of the wrong things. You're never moving. You're not. And you're sitting in front of me. You look like a gorgeous, healthy woman. You must have been going like, what the hell?
Yeah. Luckily my brain didn't process that, you know, those first few months after I wasn't able to comprehend, like,
yeah, you're still in shock.
Totally. And, yeah, and my therapist would tell me, like, yeah, that part of your brain is not ready to,
it's like PTSD.
Yeah. But I could see everyone, you know, around me saying that, like, how could this have happened to Jennifer? She's the healthiest person in our family.
Oh, we hear that all the time.
Yeah. But it wasn't until, like I said, the year mark that the emotions started flooding in for me. And I could not stop crying every day. And
survival mode. And that's important to highlight. You're in survival mode. You're just getting through the day. You're just, you know, I'm guilty of that. Whenever I face something that's traumatic or painful or stressful, I'm that it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. What do I need to do next? Where do I need to be? Especially when it comes to your health and you're going through rehab and all of these things and they can't figure it out. Yeah. You're just in survival mode.
That's right.
And then when all the noise kind of dies down around you and you're faced alone with yourself, it's like, okay, I'm it gets here. Loud. Let's talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah. It gets loud and it kind of makes, you know, it forces you to start to process and deal and handle it. And it was really, I had the best supportive system a girl could ask for, but it was like, they could only get me so far. And I still wanted to somehow move forward, you know, and not be stuck anywhere.
And that's my question. How do you not live in fear every single day that that will happen again?
Such a great question, because that's what I was living in for about 6 months. You know, like I said, that first year I was emotionally unable to process it. I'm in survival mode. My brain, it was protecting me, and I was thankful for that, honestly. But then when I started to feel that anxiety rush in every day and was living in fear, like if you don't somehow find a way to ask for help and to help you process with that, it's going to eat you alive.
Yeah.
The fear and anxiety will eat you up.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it, like I said, hiring a coach at the moment that I did was, I don't want to say it was life-saving, but it definitely helped me start to pivot and go in a different direction, go in a direction that, you know, she was like, I want to meet you where you are and help me move forward.
Yeah. And that's how I speak with my clients. And I'm so happy that you bring that up, because a lot of people doubt the impact of life coaches, mindset coaches, you know, relationship coaches, because they think, oh, why would I invest in someone when I'm not at a level of optimal wellness where I can perform? Like, you get a coach when you're feeling super good. If not, you go see a traditional therapist. You go see a counselor. And so it's such an interesting point, because what she said to you is exactly what it is. We meet our clients exactly where they're at, and we ask the questions that help them figure out what's working, what's not working, why it's not working, what needs to be healed, a lot of shadow work, inner child work, defining goals. Where do you want to go? But how do you want to get there? What works for you? It's more action oriented than therapy.
For sure.
Than talk therapy, but it doesn't change the fact that you do all the work.
Right. And that's what I want to make sure.
You had to do all the work. The coach was there to ask you the questions, but you have to answer those questions.
Right. I just want to be able to like bridge that gap for you and, you know, bring awareness potentially to what's holding you back. Cause I think a lot of times some people, maybe they're aware, but some maybe are subconsciously like unaware that this is what has been holding them back. And, oh, it probably started when you were 7, 8, 9, 10, you know, that I learned so much about the inner child work going through my coaching certification, which was so incredibly powerful for me, let alone being able to now help coach others to do it. It was being able to go back to, man, maybe I didn't properly grieve the loss of my mom. I didn't realize that I masked it for so long by jumping into a sport, which was very helpful to me. You know, I played tennis the next 7 years year round.
Yeah.
Looking back, thinking, oh, I thought I was just taking my stress and anger and frustration out in sport, but nope, I was just really masking it and didn't want to feel.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things of trauma. And, you know, that's, I'm diving into trauma and Flip the Script. Because as a certified hypnotherapist, that's what I do. I help women get to the root cause of their limiting beliefs. And diving inside the trauma, it's remarkable how we misunderstand how trauma shows up for us in our lives.
Yes.
There are little signs like, you know, the little voice of self-sabotage, the inner doubt, the people pleasing, the all or nothing mentality, right? Like all of that cognitive distortion. And we don't realize, we're just like, oh, I'm like that because my mother, you know, my grandmother was like that, or my aunt was like that. She was all or nothing. It's either we had it all or we had nothing. I'm like that. We make all of these excuses throughout our lives. But when you really sit down with a coach, and you kind of like start to identify these behaviors, you realize that there are coping mechanisms. that stemmed from your trauma. And it's insane.
Yeah. So many people maybe are not aware that it's your ego, it's your fear, right? That's keeping you safe and protected from what's truly possible to help you kind of overcome those things. And when you accept them versus resist them, that's where the power is, right? That's where the freedom is, to like let some of that go.
But there's not really, I also think that, you know, the brain is well made, and the subconscious mind, everything is perfect, not touching on the hardware. But at 11 years old, you couldn't have unpacked all of that. At 15 years old, you couldn't. At 20 years old, you couldn't, right? So that's why life is designed so beautifully, because you were probably thinking so intensely about the fact that your mom died when she was 34. And how can I live my life? What can I do with my life? There's so much living left to do. And we kind of attract these things, and then boom, it happens. And it's like, yeah, put your money where your mouth is. What are you going to do about it now?
Yes.
All of the shit that makes you unhappy and stresses you out in your life, are you going to eliminate it? Or are you going to keep playing? Like, what are you going to do to live? But that's hindsight 2020.
Right.
Because when you're sitting, and I'm sure you weren't thinking that.
Right. Absolutely not. But I can honestly say that it was through working with my coach that everything came full circle for me, right? Like, I was able to process, like, oh, my mom didn't make it at 34, and now I did. Now it's time to honor her legacy and take her with me as I now want to serve others that are going through something similar maybe to what I've gone through and want to get to where I've got.
What's one of the most, you know, challenging maybe or inspirational things that your coach ever said to you that you were kind of like, damn?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. First meeting. It was probably our first meeting where I'm a hot bawling disaster sitting in the corner of this coffee shop, and she meets me. And through our conversation, she goes, did you ever ask yourself, why me? And I can tell you, and I told her, I haven't done that, but I've seen everyone around me obviously say, why Jennifer? Why? And she just looked at me as a matter of fact, as anybody's ever looked at me, and said, that's because you need to ask yourself, why not you?
Yeah.
And I'm like, ooh, that hit different, you know? Yeah. And I was emotional in that moment because I couldn't even fathom asking myself that question. But after months of working with her, I was like, that's right. Why not me?
Why not?
I'm handling it.
I've got that. I love it. Yeah. I've got shivers. So you work with your coach. You're totally inspired. You decide that you're going to become a coach and inspire others.
Yes.
So did you leave the corporate sales world where you had just come off your biggest year and you were thriving, you were doing great? Did you just like leave that in the past with the stroke?
You know, I went back because they were so gracious with me and coming back at my own pace. And I think I was going back then to feel normal. So it definitely took me another year and a half. And while working with my coach to be like, yeah, this is definitely not my calling anymore. Thank you for being so good to me while I'm here. But I meant for more here. I meant to do something more than sell, you know, my floor mats and restroom supplies, which is what I sold at my corporate organization, which was an amazing opportunity. So I did walk away on my 2-year stroke anniversary, actually, and found a locally owned and operated home health company here in Indy. And I still represent them. And amazing. Because my executive director is my college roommate, and she's been my dear friend for 20 years, and she has seen what I've gone through and has been a supporter of me and a dear friend more so than she is a boss, but she's one of the best leaders I've ever had. So she knows that I am pursuing this endeavor while still helping her out. So it was a great transition to walk away from corporate sales, and has given me the time to dig into like my training and development certification to pursue helping others for full time, for sure.
Now really start living.
Yeah.
Right.
Living my calling.
Yeah. What part of your daily life, or what part of this journey — we really haven't, you know, dove into this, but from the time you were little to where you are now, what part has spirituality played or some type of connectedness to the universe? Did you have more of a religious upbringing? How has that impacted you and helped you through all of this?
Yeah, I love that question because, you know, shortly after losing my mom, we weren't overly religious before. You know, we weren't like church going every Sunday, but my dad tried to implement that with us after, thinking it could help, right? And I just wasn't open to it then. But realizing probably within a year, having my first spiritual moment of meeting with a medium, like a palm reader.
Yeah.
Then, which, you know, at like 12 years old, I was terrified in him telling me, oh, I feel someone that wants to talk to you. Like, your mom is with you. She's telling me that she loves you and that she's always here for you. Like, at 12, I was terrified. Right. And he's like, she's going to come visit you. And I didn't know what that meant. And then 9 years later in college, she did. She came to see me in my dream.
She waited a while.
And I get emotional thinking about it because it was very powerful.
Yeah. Those dreams are the best, but they're the most confusing. You wake up and you're just like, did it happen? I want to fall back asleep.
Yes.
Trying to remember all of the things that they said. Yeah. It's very emotional.
It was comforting, but also, yeah, coming to that realization that, man, that wasn't real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so did that change your, you know, attitude towards spirituality? Do you have a practice in place that keeps you connected and grounded? What do you do on a daily basis to stay connected to the universe and gratitude and all of that?
Yeah, such a good question. You know, I really didn't have a practice until, you know, starting to work with my coach and to implement a meditation practice that I thoroughly enjoy doing every morning. Just as a calming, you know, few moments and to feel present and to intentionally take these deep breaths, as well as practicing gratitude. And she helped me implement that as well, right? And acknowledging. So it's been probably the last 3 years or so. And then truly over the last year through my coaching certification, our coach, she's such a huge, we learned about the inner child work. So it was really through coaching sessions with my peer coaches that I got to practice that inner child dialogue and going back to finding proper healing from that. And to have a couple conversations with my mom that I had never really had out loud, sure, in my head, in my thoughts, my voice, but to say out loud and have that connection with her these last few months has been extremely powerful and helpful and soothing and healing.
It is when you're in a session and you can have either a dialogue with the hurter or, you know, from the point of view of the child who's hurt, it's extremely liberating because those things have been in your head for a long time. And now you say them and it's like, ooh, I said it.
Oh, yeah, and it's like a release.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Well, I am so proud of you. I don't know you, but I feel proud of you and for your resilience and your courage and your strength. And I think a lot of people in this, you know, in similar situation would have asked, why me? And the fact that you didn't is a testament to your character.
That means a whole lot, Emmy. Thank you so much.
And good luck on this new journey.
Yeah.
I mean, coming off a stroke, you're not picking the easy path, like, oh, this is nice and cushy, this feels safe. You're kind of like, nope, there's a lot of living to do, and you're getting in there and you're forging your way. And I think that's so cool.
Thank you. And I truly hope that what I do empowers others to do the same. I really do. Especially survivors.
Yeah. What's your definition of resilience?
To keep pushing through, even on the harder, tough days. Like, those are the days that are going to teach you something and provide this lesson that you need to hear. You know, it's easy to move forward and you know, keep going on the easy days, but it's those moments, those days that challenge you that are going to teach you the most. So to never give up. you know, if you fall down, get back up, find a reason to get back up and want to keep, you're worth, you know, living for, and there's purpose for you.
I love that. I was, you know, really studying resilience before this season, and the definition in the dictionary, the Merriam-Webster dictionary, the second definition was, you know, something that returns to its original shape after it's been pushed, pulled, bent, twisted. And I have my own opinion on that, but I want to ask you, do you believe that you ever go back to your original shape after you go through something like losing your mom or having a stroke at the age of 34? Do you go back?
I don't believe you do.
I don't believe you do either. But yeah, that the version of you that you become is the version that you're meant to be at this exact time?
100%.
Yeah. I think people call Merriam-Webster and just be like, eh, you probably don't go back. Cause like, if you take a piece of paper and you scrunch it up and you de-scrunch, like it's never, no, but it's better. Right. Like,
I will tell you, I think that's what a lot of stroke survivors need to hear and understand, because when I see their comments sometimes in the Facebook groups that I'm in, they miss the old them. They just want to go back to the old them. They want to go back to normal. And I'm like, you don't do that. You have to start to accept and embrace.
Yeah. Someone who has a car accident.
Right.
You're never going to be the same in a car. Like someone who's had, you know, who's been in a break and enter. Yeah. I was little, I was 5 or 6 years old, and we were in a, you know, in a clothing store downtown Montreal. I was with my dad and, you know, my stepmom at the time. And there was a break and enter. It was a fancy leather store, and they came in and put us in the back room, and my dad was trying to protect me, and they pointed a gun to his head. I still remember that.
For sure.
Like, just that event shaped me in a different way. Like, you can't go back once you've seen that.
That's right.
And so whether it's the loss of a dog or miscarrying a child, but I think that the emphasis needs to be on after you've survived. And I've not gone through a stroke, so I can't speak on that, but I've gone through, you know, enough things in my life to know that once you come out on the other side, you realize that you wouldn't want to go back to that version of yourself, because now you know how strong you are. Now you know how loved you are if you have a great support system. Now you know that life is worth fighting for. All those things you took for granted, it's so clear now what's important to you and what's not. Yeah.
Amen. Emmy, amen. Yeah, I completely agree with everything that you said.
You know?
Yeah, your perspective on life completely changes.
It changes. Yeah.
And it can't be for the better if you want to open your eyes to it.
Yeah. And I mean, I think definitely this podcast, if you're someone who's just like really crispy and, you know, you're just like stuck in little me land and you're a victim of life and you're grumpy and you're grouchy, you're probably not listening to this podcast. And if you are, it's because you're really curious about how you can, you know, take different approaches to your life. And I hope that that's the case. But I think if you're listening, you're open-minded. I think those who have decided that they're going to stay in the why me and, you know, this is bullshit, this is hard, you can see them coming. It's,
yeah,
that version of the dictionary is fine for them. But I think that it's also important to let people know that if you've gone through something so traumatic and you're here 5 years, 10 years later, still trying to get back to the you that you were before it, maybe it's time to let go of that notion and start getting curious about how incredibly brilliant this version of you now is.
Yes. That's definitely, yeah. Those are the clients for me, for sure.
High five, sister. Tell me.
Open and willing. Yeah.
Yeah, open and willing. Because we can't push, pull, or drag anybody.
Right.
Right? You have to want it. And you might need a little gentle nudge. But we can't push or pull transformation out of someone. So before we end the show, I want to ask you, what is one thing, if you could go back and say to your 11-year-old self, you know, a little bit after she lost her mom, what would you go back and say to her?
That I love you. That you've got this angel above you now that is going to guide and lead you every step of the way. And that you can do this. You will become a stronger, better version of you. Just because your mom is not here physically, more importantly, she's with you internally and in your soul.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you so much, Jennifer, for sharing your story with our listeners. You definitely fit the definition of resilient. So I'm grateful to have met you.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Can you tell our listeners where they can go read more about you and find you and get curious about your coaching practice?
Yes, please. I would love to hear from your listeners and hear their stories too. And so justcommitcoaching.com is my website, and to learn more about my story and to connect. I offer complimentary clarity sessions just to see, am I the right coach for you? And are you the right client? Can I help you get to where you want to go? So yeah, email me, Jennifer@justcommitcoaching.com, and connect with me on Instagram @justcommitcoaching.
I love that. All of Jennifer's details will be in the show notes, and my heart is filled with gratitude for all the listeners. Have a beautiful day.